with Armand DeMille.
Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, making you think better, more peacefully. Hey, if you've just tuned in and you want to know who we are, and you're somebody who's not familiar with WBAI, it's a rather remarkable station that focuses on bringing you as much that's not poisoned by the need to present you with commercials and non-truths. WBAI, a remarkable place. I've been here, 35 years. So here's a question for you, my friends. What's the truth? You know, you listen to the politicians nowadays, and they're telling you things, and you say some is true, some is not true, some is true, not is not true. And I know people who get upset with these politicians. They say, look, he's lying. That's not true. Look at this fact. He did not do that. He did not get elected when his mother was Vemadema. But that's if you believe that anybody's story is true. Now, imagine if you go through life saying, well, people tell stories. And that everybody tells a story, and that therefore truth is a question. Because people tell stories that may be true or may not be true, or they may be true to them and not true to the rest of the world. So if you get to a certain point in life, you begin to hear stories. Now, for example, you know, a policeman pulls a car over. Somebody who's driving wildly. And he pulls him over and the man or woman reeks of alcohol. The cop gets out and says, and sees some cocaine or some crack on the dashboard. And maybe a gun in the glove compartment. Right? And he pulls a guy out and he says, so how do you account for that? What do you think the man's going to do, what woman's going to do? They're going to make up a story. Oh, I picked up somebody on the road. This isn't my car. This is my mother's car, and she has a boyfriend who carries a gun. And he makes up a story. Now, the policeman does not whack him across the head and say, you're a liar. The policeman is trained to say, oh, really? Tell me the story. Okay, put your hands behind your back. So the policeman, of course, there are crazy policemen, but there are crazy everybody's. They are used to hearing stories. They are expecting you to tell a story because you don't want to get a ticket. There are people who get tickets and people who don't get tickets. There are driving tickets. So a policeman calls you over and you've been speeding. And some people get tickets and some people don't. You would think it's according to how cute you are. No, somebody said to me, a friend of mine, Ricky Roy, said, she has a lawyer. She said, there are certain people who have trouble with authorities. They always get tickets. There are other people who don't have trouble with authorities. They don't get tickets as often. So it seems that if you look at an authority and that authority represents some cruelty or a cruel parent from the past, you're going to deal with them in a way that's fake. And in this fakeness, they're going to detect it and they're going to get angry with you and they're going to give you a ticket as opposed to not giving you a ticket. Other people, they let go. So you're getting, if you have a big ticket history, it means you got trouble with your father. That's what it says. And if you have a line of scofflaw tickets, you guaranteed have trouble with your dad. A man gets caught having an affair. He starts his story. It didn't happen, he says. Oh, no, no, it didn't happen. No, no, she was just cleaning my pants. No? Okay, all right. If it did happen, the second part of the story is it was an accident. she was bending there, and I bumped into her, and it went from this to this. Okay, that doesn't go. The story gets different. Well, you know, remember you forgot to give me lunch. So I was hanging out at this place, and, you know, you kind of blame the other person for it. And the story develops. Now, it develops not only according to what the man wants to tell to get away from punishment, but according to what the other person wants to hear. They want to hear it was insignificant. They want to hear there was no love. They want to hear, well, I did, but, you know, I didn't go all the way. Oh, it was only playing. That's what you want to hear. So now what we're understanding about this is that stories are made up by storytellers and also created by story listeners, because there's two sides to a story. One side of the story is I tell the story. The other side of the story is I'm listening to the story and I want the story. This is bringing us somewhere today. I promise. Stick with me. A divorce story. You go to a lawyer. You tell the lawyer your divorce story. The lawyer listens to you. And you tell your story. And you tell more and more of what a poor victim you are. And how it was bad. And why this and why that. And the lawyer learns to listen compassionately. He learns to look like he really cares as he's listening. But he's thinking about the clock. He's thinking about billable hours. He's thinking, so how do I create this? And maybe we could go even further. Like if you want to hire a detective, I could get a piece of that too. He's thinking billable hours as you tell your story. Your story doesn't matter. Doesn't matter? Is he showing the right app? Are lawyers bad? No, this is what they do. They bill people for talking to them. So you can tell stories a great deal. Very often you tell stories to your parents, right? Jonna, what was that? You was Jonna Valerio's with us here today. What were you saying about talking to your parents?
Well, I think sometimes, you know, our parents always want to know how we're doing, how are you? And we say, oh, you know, everything's fine, it's fine, it's fine. And, you know, because sometimes we just don't want to go that deep with them. And so we save that for other people or friends or, you know, so our parents often want to know how we're doing.
So sometimes you feel that if they ask you for a truth, you're doing two things. You're sparing yourself the invasion that they would do, right, if they were to talk to you further about it, number one. And number two, you're giving them what they want to hear, right? They want to hear it's all okay. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. They do. Of course, they worry about their children.
So you got two sides of it. Now, what about when you tell your children stories, right? Let's say you have an argument with your husband and you're screaming at each other and the kids say, are you and Daddy okay? Do you make up stories?
Yes, I think, you know, you want to save them some pain. In general, yes, I think so.
You make up stories. Uh-huh. There are doctor stories. You know, you go to a doctor, and you tell a doctor a story, and the doctor sits there, and you've got your allotted 10 minutes, according to the insurance. So he's got a maximum of 10 minutes. So if you write your story down, he reads through it real quickly. The real good doctors scan it into their computers, but they don't want to waste that time because they have to pay somebody by the hour to do that. And so you tell the story and he listens. What's he listening for? Markers. He wants to hear a marker that says, I could prescribe this pill to you. Not that he's a bad doctor, but that's the way doctors listen. Doctors don't believe stories. Well, my arm started falling off when I was 2 years ago. It's like, this is not what matters. What matters is what is. And what could I recommend? But we seem to like people to listen to our stories. So we get our nails done in salons where people who don't even speak the same language listen to our stories. And we tell stories to people who can't understand us. Now, think about this one. You go into a psychiatrist or you go to me and you tell me a story. What do I feel? as you tell me a story. Well, we're going to get back to that because I want to tell you what I feel when people tell me stories. But before we go there, this is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone and Gianna Valerio. I was touched a couple of days ago by an article called Surviving the Pain at the Roots by Alexandra Heather Force, who approaches, well, she was talking about her own history of anxiety and compulsions and stuff like that. But here's what I took from it, which I thought was very interesting. She talked about anxiety. She says, this is what anxiety does. The anxiety comes from being a sensitive being in an insensitive world. That the most anxious people are sensitive people in an insensitive world. Kind of interesting concept, don't you think? Okay, we're taught when we are young that life will be fair, the good guys will win, that if we're well-behaved, we won't suffer, that out there for each of us is some perfect stranger who will swoop in with armor and save us. Some fictitional man or woman who will make everything, all the assaults, all the sorrows, all the disappointments, all the bruises, all the traumas, all the disappointments, they'll make them okay.
You know, Armand, this part of her essay really grabbed me. She says, in the beginning, when we come out of the womb, the world is bright and loud. Strangers fondle us, our bodies, as though we asked them to. And then we are given to our parents, who are supposed to love one another and us. The author goes on to say that more often than not, the love is lacking and that becomes confusing. When the blind trust between child and parent begins to shatter, we start to see things as they really are. We see disappointed tears in one parent. We hear the screams of another. And the reality starts to come into focus. We realize that what we believed was real never was. It becomes difficult to bear.
Wow, that is powerful, isn't it? When that happens, we have to look elsewhere for the picture of happiness that we formed before. We see clearly the underlying thread of sadness inside those who love us all the while. Now, what happens when you see that sadness in your parents? Right? It's kind of like you peek over your shoulder and you could see it, like Dad sitting there. And suddenly you realize, hey, Dad, he's got a quiet spot. Maybe he's a little depressed. And you begin to realize that they're not so happy. All the while, we try to give them the light and love as if we could just make them happier. See, and our story becomes, I will make you happy. I, the child, will make you happy. And it's as if we have an endless supply of this joviality, this kind of making our parents feel better. Soon we're tired, our lights give up, we get dim, but we still give. We try to make things we cannot change different so that people we love are happy. But the burden becomes great, and those we try to fix are never satisfied. Is anxiety the result of a violent culture where abuse has been so normalized that it seems insignificant? We're told that to be strong means to suffer in silence. And maybe strength comes from giving our suffering a voice. Back to this author and what she said. She said, our culture is not nurturing. We ask each other, how are you doing? But we do not really want to know. We do not really want that person to say anything other than fine, because that would mean we'd have to listen, to really care, something that most of us have not even done with ourselves. We want form responses, people who check all the right boxes, who say all the right things, whether they mean them or not, a resume for a cultural puffed up with lies. That's what we want. As a result, we have a fine culture that is everything but fine. Medicated smiles, robotic responses, lifetimes that pass under the guise of fine. All we really want is someone to ask and to care. But here becomes the question. What happens when they do? When someone listens to you, what do you do? And that's what we're talking about today, about the stories we create and how we never really feel connected because we created a story and the person responded to the story, but the story isn't true. We want nourishment, not only for our bodies, but for our souls. That's what we need to flourish, to feel less anxious. Environments that are safe, loving relationships that are honest and nurturing. Nobody wants to fight, not really. We're taught to fight ourselves and others. We're taught to be defensive and aggressive so that we may survive another day. But it seems it should be different. So what happens? What happens, my friend, is that we become... Eventually, we try to figure out, why am I unhappy? And the way we try to figure out why am I unhappy is we figure because somebody's got something that we want, and if only we could get it, it'll be okay. And we don't know how to do it, so we tell stories. And we make up stories. You go to your dentist. Your dentist says, and how are you feeling? And you're talking to your dentist, and your dentist is thinking procedures. Maybe I'll offer them a cap. You know, maybe we could do this. Maybe we could do an extra cleaning. You go to a psychiatrist, like I said. You go to a therapist. And you start telling a therapist a story. You see, we become method actors in our own story. It's a movie that we make up. We make it up from childhood. You're married, and you wonder, a man I met yesterday said, I don't know why I'm in this marriage. He says, I feel like I want to be here because I'm supposed to be here. It's like he was cast into the role of a bizarre TV sitcom. You know, it's like, or not even a sitcom, it's a tragedy. It's like one of these series, and he's every day he's got another story and another story. So, I'm beginning to sound like one of those gurus who sit around on a pillow, you know, and I'm looking down at my audience that's following me, and I'm saying to them, give up all your belongings, give up everything, wear orange, and because everything is just a story, everything is fake, and nothing is real. Well, I don't mean to say that to preach, nor do I want you to give up things. But if I could get you to see that the stories are only stories, what a relief it would be for you, for the people around you, and for the world around us. This is Armand DeMille, Lisa Arnone, Johnna Valerio. We talk about this stuff before the show. And we talk about it, and we research it, and we pull out a few things. But this idea of an argument, of having an argument, you know, when you believe your story, and you say to someone, you always attack me, you're always negative, you're always this or always that, you're saying that the last time I remembered you're doing it, I made such an impression on my mind that I considered that it's always true. So every time we remember a part of our story, right? My father was mean to me. And I tell the story, my father was mean to me. Every time I describe the story, it is embellished in some way and changed, and it becomes a different story. And your story gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and eventually you truly believe it. What if you believed that everybody is telling you something that's not true, but nobody's lying? Try to wrap your mind around that. That's how I feel. As a therapist, people come to see me, and they want to talk to me about their stories and their problems. I'm probably not going to have anybody ever come to me again after I say this, but I'll say it anyway. So when they come in with their stories. Well, my wife is angry at me because I can't get a better job. And the story just unfolds, and I'm listening to it. And I'm loving the person who walks in the door, because I see everybody who walks in as a damaged child. I see them all as like kids who are just don't know which way to turn. And then they tell me their story. It's like a kid saying, I went to school and Joey was looking at Anna and I got jealous and, you know, she wants him because he has a jacket and I don't have that jacket. And this becomes the story. I got to get those sneakers, Mom. A story. So if you don't believe the story, how could you be a therapist? How can you possibly become a therapist? In fact, Lisa, let me ask you, when somebody comes to you with their story, what do you do with your insides? I know what I do with mine.
Well, I listen and I try to understand it at two ways at the same time. So I'm listening to the story as it's told to me, and I'm wondering what that story means to the person. I'm hoping that the story will illuminate something, will show me something about, well, especially if the story gets repeated in a lot of different ways and different situations, then I come to believe that the story is actually telling me something about the way the person operates in the world.
So yes, so the content of the story is important to you.
Yes, and being respectful of the person's need for the story.
I understand. That's the way most therapists work. And that's the way the good therapists work. They focus on that. I just don't. I find the story itself hard to believe. Now, how many men do I know who talk about how they could find it impossible to satisfy their wives? And that's why this high rate of divorce that we have, according to Brenda Lukman, who wrote the book Why Men Leave, she said that what they have is the men hear story after story of a displeased partner who is impossible to please. Now, the story gets a little complicated because most people leave the marriages around the time that a woman goes through menopause. Isn't that a story? Right there. So going through menopause, you're going through this incredible change in your body, but you make up stories. I got to get a new house. I got to get this. You don't know the solution because you're not aware of it. You're not in counseling. You're not aware of the changes taking place. Your mate is responding to the words you say, right? And you're now dealing with this created story. Or men have that too. They start losing their testosterone and it starts dwindling and they start feeling like they're not vital anymore. And they make up stories. I got to get that new car. I have to buy that. I have to. And it just becomes a new pressure. And we begin to believe these stories. And then they come into couples counseling about these stories, about these issues. Well, he wants to get a new car and we can't afford it. And she wants us to move to another place, and we can't afford that. And I look at it, and I look at these two broken kids who really are just trying to feel safe in this world, who are fighting with this issue called stories. So what do I have to say to all of you? I have to say to you to try to, in your own mind, think, consider. None of it is true. All that stuff you worry about, none of it's true. None of it's real. It's real in as much as you suffer for it, you pay for it, you're involved in it, but it's a movie. It's a movie, my friends. It's a drama. It's a thing that was produced. Yes, as a child, you had a rough time. Okay. That was a long time ago, right? The rough time you have nowadays is the rough time you have nowadays. There's a friend of mine who always winds up having problems foisted on him. It's just some little thing happens. He He gets an apartment. He invites somebody to come live in his apartment, and that somebody will never tell him. The guy comes. He's just staying there for a week. But in that week, all he does is talk about his past relationship and the grief that he has in this past relationship, and he just won't stop. And he's crying and upset all the time. And he grabs his friend of mine and he says, I got to tell you about it, because he's compulsively pouring this out. And the friend is saying, I can't ask the guy to leave. He's a basket case, but he's in this situation so often that you begin to realize there's a story here. There's a story about a man who invites into his life things that get him caught in his own supposed story of being a good guy. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take your calls and ask you about this today at 212-209-2950. 2900-2950. 212-209-2900 today, right? But, however, I do want to remind you about something. Last week, we talked about the buddy system at WBAI, and we did a program where we invited you to join WBAI to be part of this ongoing donation. Now, Lisa and I both signed up for it, and what it means is that you could give them, you could call WBAI at 212-209-2950, and you could say to them that you want to make a donation to the station, or you could do it online. And the way you do the donation is very passively. You get something like $10 a month, $15 a month taken out of your account, out of your credit card, and it goes straight to them, and you never even feel it. I mean, it's such a little amount of money for what you get. For example, if I were 21 years old and I heard today's program and I heard somebody saying to me, listen, kitty, it's okay, but it's all a story and you don't have to take it too seriously, that would be worth that $15 a month to me. And a lot of the good stuff that you hear here on WBAI, which you won't hear any place else in the world. So let me remind you, what you get if you sign up for this buddy program is you also get a, they send you a tote bag, right? I'm looking forward to getting mine. A tote bag that means a bag that says WBAI on it, which is a great thing to carry around. Because if you carry this bag around and somebody else who knows WBAI sees you, they will talk to you. And they will say, oh, there's a person, an intelligent person, who also believes in giving where they could support something, and who also is somebody with an investigative mind. So it's a great way to meet people. You could also, I think, get a t-shirt, but I like the tote bag. I think a tote bag should be like a flag you wave to get other people to come in your direction. So this is the thing. It's called buddying, and it's called the buddy system that they're using at WBAI. It's it just simply means that if you stretch out now, reach into your pocket, go online, get out your credit card, leave them a number, and that they will be able to respond to you, 212-209-2950, or to call or to go on the website, and you'll find it listed on the website just as well. So that's the story, and this is Armand DeMille. We're going to be taking a short break. I'm going to play you some music about what happens when your story gets boiled all the way down. And then at the end of the program today, I'm going to be playing you my very, very, very favorite single piece of music that I have, that I like. That's at the end of the program. So we will be back with you in just a couple of minutes, and then we'll play you my one meatball song, which took place in the 1930s. When a person had nothing but 15 cents in their pocket, and all they could do is go into a restaurant and get one meatball, and what that means, you know? So we'll be right back.
Place in town. near at hand. The simple dinner that he had planned. The guests were startled one and all. I hear that waiter loudly call. One meatball. One meatball. This here gent wants one meatball. Some bread, sir, if you please. Waiter hollered down the hall. You get no bread with one meatball. One meatball. One meatball. Get no bread with one meatball. The little man felt very bad. One meatball was all that he had. In his dreams he hears that call. You get no bread with one meatball. One meatball. One meatball. Get no bread with one meatball. One meatball was all that he had. One meatball. So very sad, yet no bread with one meatball. One meatball. One meatball. Yet no bread with one meatball. The little man felt very bad. One meatball was all that he had. In his dreams he hears that call. You got no bread with one meatball. One meatball. One meatball. Get no bread with one meatball.
Roy Bookbinder, the Hillbilly Blues Collection, One Meatball. One meatball, that's it. You get no bread with one meatball. Sometimes you just can't get enough of what you need. 212-209-2900. We're going to take your calls within seconds. We're talking about the stories that we make up to get by with. And I'm saying to you, listen, my friends, this is a story. I know. Many of you who see me personally, who have come to see me personally, you've heard me listen to your story. And I listen with great compassion because I feel great compassion. And I understand how you frame it in your mind. I understand in your mind, this happened and it happens and this is what continues and this is the way your life is and you're stuck. I have a man who comes to see me. He is always late. Always. He doesn't even listen to the radio program. He's probably somebody who has more trouble with other people than anybody I have ever seen. Nobody feels close to him. His children doesn't, his wife doesn't, his parents don't. Nobody does. Nobody likes him. And, on top of which, he's always late. On top of which, he's always... But I schedule with him on purpose. If I'm going to see him at 1 o'clock, I schedule him at 12:30. And why do I see him? Because nobody else would see him. Because his story is redundant. It goes in a circle. But I met with him the other day with his family. And you know what I said to his family? I said, I love this man. Because none of his story is true. And I know it's not true. So all that's left is the person. And the family was touched because they realized, hey, this guy's like an alien on the planet. His perception, the way he handles the world. So he lives by his story, but his story is obviously not real. But what would he have if he didn't have the story? That guy I saw who thought he was Napoleon, who I tell the story about, he came to see me, he was like 75 years old, he thought he was Napoleon, his family brings him to see me. The story is that's his whole story. What am I going to do if I take that story away? What's he going to do, face reality? So, do I offer you reality if I take away your story? If I remove your story? Most people come into therapy to make their story work better. They want to keep the same movie, but they just want to get a better ending. But they're going to stick with the same story.
I wonder if people can do without the story and what purpose it serves. And if, I guess what you're saying is bend the purpose.
What do you mean bend?
Help them bend the purpose of the story to make it the story better. Somehow to get in there. But what if, what would happen if you take away the story?
Well, I don't believe the stories. I don't believe my own story. Okay, here's what happens. Sometimes I realize how alone I am. Sometimes I take my story and I look at it and I go, it's all made up. Every bit of it is made up in my mind. And so I will actually realize, I guess this is the point. If you take away your story, you take away the very shards of the illusion of existence. If you're not an actor in a play that you design, then where are you dancing? Then what are you doing? Then where are you? What's your purpose? Do you need to have a story to have a purpose? I look at this universe and I'm in awe all the time. I think people are amazing. Although I look at people like, you know, people are like they're just different. Everybody's different in the way that they manifest, but they all got their story. Now, I don't need to bust the stories open, but I don't believe them. I just don't believe them. So I think that if you don't have the story, what do you have? You have a real difficult thing, and I'm telling people, keep your stories. You know, you want to make your children happy. You want to send them to college. I see people up on 78th Street sending their kids to grammar schools or pre-grammar schools. They even go to kindergarten schools, getting them ready to get into Yale. Because you have to go to the right kindergarten school to get the right something, to get into the right grammar school, to get into the right high school, so that you can get into the right college now, in kindergarten, in preschool. Is there preschool? As low as where do you start? Where do they start training the babies?
Pre-K, pre-kindergarten, which is like nursery school, what we used to call nursery school.
And they really train the kids in nursery school. They kind of pick them out.
It's like a track that they're on, yeah.
So I mean, now what if you don't have that? Right? What if you don't have it? So you're not going to have a kid who's going to be on top of the world. So what if that doesn't happen? What if you can't be proud of your child? You know, what if it takes meaning away from you? But it's not real meaning. Because even with the meaning, you don't feel that satisfaction. But there is something about having no story and smiling. There is something about that. I don't think many people are going to get there. But I do believe that the beauty of what we're doing here today is telling people it's only a story. So no matter how involved you are in it, no matter how tragic it seems, remember, it's only a story. Yes, you and your wife had a fight. You know, you had a fight with your wife yesterday. Both of you, unless you were looking to have this fight continue, can throw up your hands and say, let's stop. Let's make believe this conversation never took place. And we'll start all over. And you just as easily could do that. A number of couples that I see who come to see me, who I just tell them to dissolve it for a moment. Put your hand on each other. Yesterday, a son put his hand on his father's arm in my office, and he hasn't done that in years. And I said, please don't talk to each other. Please don't talk. And of course, all the eyes moistened. You know, please, let's get away from the words. 212-209-2900. So in answer to your question, I cannot promote the absence of story. We can't hang up a shingle that says the Storyless Center. You know, there are places like Landmark that work very, very well with people on getting them to challenge and face their stories and to recognize that it's just that. I'm not looking for you to give it up.
Okay.
I'm looking for you to recognize that it is a story. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille, let's take a call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
I just broke up with someone, and she had a story, I had a story. It ultimately, obviously, didn't work. She had this story about her soon-to-be ex, legally at least, and I just was being me. And I just tried to portray this perfect, perfect picture. And it went on only for about 2.5 months.
Was it great?
I wouldn't say so, because I noticed that the whole time she was really unwinding from this husband she's been married to for 14 years. I didn't really realize it until the very end that you could call it being played, I guess. Not that she was blatantly nasty or derogatory, really, but it was just, you could see all these things coming out. She was unwinding from all the frustrations she
was
telling
your name? What's your name?
I'd rather be called Anonymous for today, if you don't
Anonymous mind. Is good. Yeah. Lisa Arnone is sitting with me. She's Arnonious, too. But let me, I'm going to give you a piece of your story quickly, okay? Because I just got about 5 minutes to do this. When you were a kid, did your father treat your mother badly?
No.
Who
for the
took
most part, no.
Who took care of your mom? You said, in the most part, no. Were you close to your mom at all?
Yes.
Okay, you were close to her, closer than most people?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
And, average, yes.
And did she sometimes had to confide in you feelings that she had that weren't so positive about Dad? Okay. Now look at this. The romance that you describe is exactly a repetition of that. You meet a woman, you fall in love, she's attached to somebody else. She's talking about having to unwind from him. So isn't it a coincidence that you, my dear Mr. Anonymous, have to, you're re-caught in a drama, a story that doesn't look like a story to you, but it is a story. It's that story from childhood that you were the kid who was being, in a way, there for mom.
I see. So you're possibly saying to me, I stayed longer than perhaps my good wish.
Absolutely,
because I was trying to.
You're trying to undo something from childhood.
Redo that story that may not have been so good.
That's right. And what happens over time is you redo it, and you keep redoing it, and you keep redoing it until you get so good at it that you don't get involved in that situation at all. And you don't wind up with looking for women who are victims of men who are brutal. You know what I mean? And once you find yourself with finding mates who don't feel like victims, you'll know you've crossed over. I hope I didn't go.
It's hard to read. It's hard to read.
I know. It certainly is when you're in the middle of it, because the story owns the actor.
You can't tell if the person is just that way naturally or they're just venting out their negative frustrations from the other relationship.
Yeah, I understand. Well, you could avoid the whole thing.
I just don't know.
You could just say, hey, if they're venting negative, I could go find somebody who's venting positive. You know, it comes out of the same vent.
On this one.
Yeah. You're a beautiful guy. Thank you. Thank you for calling in.
Take care.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Time for another call. Hi there.
No.
All right. So the stories, as we see now, there's a beautiful case. A story very often is a repetition of another story. So there's another story that was existed. So as you find yourself, without knowing it, trapped in relationships where you're trying to help this person get out of a certain situation.
Okay.
You know? And it's a repetition. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Armand.
Yes.
You and your meatball.
Hey.
What's going on? I ate lunch already.
Say it again. It's a shy friend. It's a shy friend. So there's a story right there. You and your meatball. All right. All right. When we were kids in my Italian family and in your Italian family, they would use the phrase meatball as meaning somebody who's kind of dense.
Mm-hmm.
You're being such a meatball.
Yep.
It never was really bad.
Okay.
Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. I'm on DeMille.
Hi, this is Meatball Catherine.
Hello, Meatball Catherine.
I have a story.
Good, we got 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, maybe I pick something or someone to fix and repeat the story. And maybe the story I'm repeating is maybe I lost my father when I was young, around 10 years old, and maybe I've always chosen men that I could predict wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Or be what I lost. So maybe that's my repeating story.
Yes. And have you gotten better at this over time?
Maybe not better, but more aware.
More aware of it. Uh-huh. So it takes the pain of separation out of it. You don't get as painful in your separations. You realize what's going on. Consciousness
right.
is a wonderful tool.
Right, and safety and being able to predict the pain makes it less painless.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, I'm proud of you. That's a good piece of learning.
Yes. Thank you, Armand.
Nice. A pleasure to have you on the air with me. Thank you so much for calling
in. Pleasure to have you always.
Sure. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Remember, my friends, I promised you I was going to play you this music today, so you're going to hear it. It's by Ali Abkar Khan, and the name of the song is from an album called Journey, and the name of the song is Lullaby. And it's just so pretty. So, so pretty that what I ask you to do is turn your radio up and just let your mind drift away with this, because it's going to take you on a beautiful journey. And then we will be back with you on Tuesday next. No, tomorrow next, Wednesday. Oh, and happy birthday to Belle. It's her birthday today. That's my sister, Belle. Right? She's a champion. Hey, be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. And here is Ali. You can go to my website, thepositivemind.com, and listen to reruns, rebroadcasts, but do make those donations to WBAI.
Mm-hmm.